anyway, we've got the ranch, and we've muddled them on what our plans are. If they're stopped or picked up by President Gray's friends, they'll give them wrong intel on us. This is the right base of operations for us, not them. It's quiet, we have working electricity and water, and now, plenty of space to work.
Yeah, and look at what we don't have.
Kate finally detonated. Her pale face flushed, and she was barely keeping a lid on her trembling anger.
You sent away trained professionals. The ones who could have conducted these camp hits you want to do. The ones who could have protected all of these kids. We should have spent time working to bring them over to our side, not manipulating them into thinking it was their idea to go. And how dare you make this kind of decision without even consulting me? I can't...
She shook her head, her eyes latching so fiercely onto mine that I had to look away.
Ruby, what is going on?
Give it a rest, Connor,
Cole said with an edge to his tone.
The plan is to train the kids to fight, to empower them.
To empower yourself,
Kate corrected sharply, and if Vida hadn't been in the room, I have no idea what Cole would have said or done in response to that. His fists clenched at his side.
I get it, Cole. I do. But this wasn't the right way. They took the computer servers. I have one laptop, and only because I brought it into my quarters to do some work last night and hid it when they started talking about leaving. They'll lock us out of the system. What are we going to do then? You burnt this bridge without giving us a way to get back over.
The League had spent the better part of a decade building up a network of information on everything, whereabouts of former politicians, access into the Skip Tracer and PSF databases, building schematics, black site locations. I'd been counting on having access to it to proceed with any and all camp hits. If nothing else, we'd need the few known satellite photographs that had ever been snapped of some of the camps.
The Greens can break into the League's network. That's not even a question, Cole said. They're the ones that built it. And I took measures to ensure that we would be able to copy the research on the cure. My only question is, where is the flash drive of the information I stole from LitaCorp, with the study on what caused IAAN?
Kate's jaw set as she looked away. Her throat bobbed as she swallowed, silent just long enough for a cold, gripping dread to come over me.
It's in the garbage. We weren't far enough outside of the city when the EMP went off. It was wiped clean by the pulse. I'm sorry. I wish...
She shook her head, stopping herself. At that, I sat down heavily in one of the chairs, feeling more and more like I was passing through a long tunnel in the opposite direction from everyone else. I barely heard Cole's sarcastic,
"Oh, wonderful."
Didn't register that Kate had stood and was already moving around me to get to the door.
Where are you going? Cole asked. Let the kids sleep a little while longer.
I'm not going to the kids, she said coldly. I'm going after the other agents to fix this mess you've gotten us into, to get them to come back so we can work together on this.
The chill in her tone sank through me, down to my bones. I'd never seen her like this, or at least I'd never had the full force of her anger barreling toward me. But I was angry too, furious. She had left us. She hadn't been there when I needed her, and I'd done the best I could to help everyone survive.
You want them to come back? I asked.
Who?
The ones that ditched you at the drop of a hat to go play terrorists, or the ones that wanted to hand us over to the PSFs?
Kate couldn't even look at me.
I'm sure there's been a misunderstanding.
You're right, I said. I misunderstood how in denial you are about who these agents are.
Ruby! Vida snarled. Shut the f-
I don't know how many times they have to prove it to you, but these agents have never cared about the League you joined, the one that actually cared about the kids who are still stuck in camps, who are still dying every day from something we're within an arm's length of finding a cure for. We don't need them. We don't need to have them taint what we're trying to do here. Wake up!
I am not interested in sending kids out to play soldier, Kate said.
You didn't have a problem with that before, I said bitterly.
You were supervised by trained agents who led the tact teams.
Right. You mean the agents who then turned around and started picking us off one at a time? How about Rob, the one who tried to kill both me and Vita in one accident? Do you even know that he came after us? He hunted us. He put a muzzle on me.
Vita was frozen in place, her face ashen. The instinct to protect Kate from any insult was clearly at war with the side of her that knew the truth. Cole reached out to put a hand on my shoulder, but I sidestepped him, waiting for Kate to look at me, waiting for an answer.
Dolly and I will leave first thing tomorrow, she said quietly. The other agents only left a few hours ago. We can still catch up to them. It felt like she'd slapped me across the face.
Fine. Then go.
Good luck,
Cole added, with only a trace of mockery in his voice. Her pale eyes flicked down over me one last time before she went out of the room, letting the door slam open and shut behind her. Vida was fast on her heels. I watched them go through the windows lining the computer room until they finally disappeared. I couldn't stand it anymore and started after them. Cole caught my arm and drew me back.
Let them cool off. They're just upset, but it had to play out this way.
Did it?
The question escaped before I could stop it, the doubt trickling in through the cracks in my heart. There was another loud groan of protest from the tunnel door. The sound got me on my feet, and both of us rushed out into the hallway. I was so sure that I'd see Kate charging down into the darkness, about to make good on her promise to leave, that the dirty, tired faces of the 8 kids standing there hit me like a blow to the chest. Each of them looked a little more terrified than the last. Senator Cruz brought up the rear, brushing away all of the hands that reached in to help her climb the last few steps. She glanced around, avoiding the assessing look from Dolly as she appeared to my left.
Made it in record time,
Cole said, pounding each of them on the back in turn, earning a few smiles and even more relieved hugs.
Did you have any problems?
No, we were a little confused about the instructions you gave us on how to get down into the base from the pub, but once we saw the place, we figured it out.
Zack, a tall, tan-skinned leader from one of the league's blue teams, seemed as unshakable as ever. He dragged a hand back through his dark hair and surveyed the place. If Zack looked relaxed now, confident, Nico had swung to the other side of the spectrum. He looked small and terrified, black hair standing up every which way, like he'd spent the last day running his hands back through it in dismay. Nico crossed his arms over his chest, cupping his elbows, breathing in deep. At least until he saw Kate. She pushed toward him, shouldering her way through the other agents, but instead of flinging himself at her the way Vida had done, he reached up, covered his face with his hands, and began to weep. It was the only word to describe the sounds coming from him. They rose over the excited chatter, smothered each and every question, sapped the laughter until it died down to a whisper. My guts twisted until I finally had to look away and let gray static fill my ears instead. None of the other kids moved toward him, only Senator Cruz, who made it very clear with her expression what she thought of us for that. Her arms were around him even before Kate's. I turned to Dolly and asked where to find the showers and the sleep rooms, grateful for the excuse to get away from the horrible sound of Nico crying, from Kate's disappointment, the others' unknowing excitement for a place that had been stripped to the point of being almost uninhabitable. From what I could see, the ranch was split along 2 hallways that ran parallel to each other and were connected by double doors at either end. The lower level had the same floor plan as the upper one did, 2 narrow, twin halls with over 12 closed doors lining each of them. One hall the stairwell emptied into was little more than a series of bunk rooms to sleep in, the kitchen, and a laundry room. One of the doors had been left open, and I glanced inside at the 4 bunk beds.
The voices in the next room were muffled, but I recognized Chubbs's, "What?" when it burst out of him. I crossed the last few feet to the door and gripped the door handle, wondering why they'd shut it at all.
"She couldn't have just told us," Vida was ranting. "Unfucking believable. If our lives were in danger, she shouldn't have dicked around with Cole. We should have been the first people she told."
I leaned toward the door, pressing my forehead against it as I listened.
"She and Cole have been acting all buddy-buddy for a while," Chubb said. "I'm not surprised they pulled something like this."
"It doesn't make sense."
Liam's voice dropped low enough that I couldn't hear it, but I was already backing away, blood pounding in my ears at the anger laced through their voices. I made my way down the hall to the linen closet that Dolly had mentioned. All of the towels had been claimed, but there was a soft, oversized black shirt tucked into a bag of street clothes the agents had missed when cleaning the joint out. I took that with me as I walked to the bathroom, grateful I wouldn't have to change back into all of my dirty clothes. The morning took on an unreal quality as I stepped into one of the shower stalls, stripped, and stepped in before the water could warm. The water burst out of the rusted showerhead and hit my skin with a freezing slap, cooling me instantly, easing the prickling on my scalp. They'd installed pumps of soap and shampoo in each stall, big industrial-sized containers that were already half empty. I let my shoulders hunch as my gaze dropped down to the water swirling deep, down, away, under my feet. I breathed. The patches of dirt that didn't wash away on my ribs and legs turned out to be bruises. I breathed. I breathed. I just breathed.
6.
I don't know if I actually slept so much as dipped in and out of unconsciousness. Flat on my back, my hands folded over my stomach, I listened to the sound of the ranch waking up. Voices called up and down the hall to each other, asking about the laundry they'd put in, complaining about the lack of hot water in the showers, laughing. I closed my eyes at the sound of Vida calling for me. "Get up," I ordered myself. "You have to deal with this." I swung my legs over the side of the bunk, scrubbing my face, trying to smooth my hair back into a ponytail. By the time I switched on the lights and opened the door, Vida was already at the other end of the hall, doubling back when I stepped out.
"What's wrong?"
I asked.
"Oh, finally done getting your beauty sleep, boo?"
she sniped.
"They waited for you. They waited an hour for you, and you didn't show. What, you're too fucking good to even say goodbye?"
Something cold coiled in my stomach. Kate and Dolly left already? After everything that had happened over the past few months, I was surprised by how deeply that cut. Didn't stop to say goodbye, didn't stay to hear us explain it fully. Kate would rather try to blow up everything we'd accomplished in getting the agents to leave by begging them back. She'd sabotage this for us.
"It's almost 3 in the afternoon, Vida said.
I stared at her in disbelief. Some of the ice finally broke from her expression. She shook her head, muttering something under her breath that I pretended not to hear.
"You were sleeping this whole time? You must have been more erect than I thought."
"Listen," I started. "About earlier." She held up a hand.
"I get it. I just have one question. Did you keep Sen's plan from me because you thought I'd knife the bitch in the kidney?"
"That might have been part of it," I admitted.
"Then you don't know me as well as you think," she said,
"because I would have gone straight for the heart.
But fair." "Where is everyone?" I asked. "Gran is lying around moping somewhere," Vida said. "Boy Scout is annoying the shit out of everyone in the kitchen."
"What? Why?" At her shrug, I asked. "And Zoo?" All at once, her expression shuddered again. When she spoke, her voice could have cut the skin from my bones.
"Do I look like I give a single shit where she is?"
"Vida," I said. "Seriously."
Whatever it was, she didn't want to talk about it. Vida was already backing away, heading toward the stairs.
We need to talk about this, I said, starting after her. The look she shot back stopped me.
That was the expression of someone who wanted to be left alone.
By the way, if you decide you fucking care, when Kate was walking down into the tunnel, Vida said, she said something to me. Tell Ruby playing with fire only gets you burned. That mean anything to you?
No, I said finally. I have no idea. Vida had been partly right. Liam was in the kitchen, only he was actually in the pantry, past the stoves and sinks, in the darkened back corner. He'd left the door wide open, likely to encourage some light inside other than the small flashlight he had clenched between his teeth. He was scribbling something down on a small flip notebook. I reached over to flick on the light switch, about to laugh at him for missing it, but nothing. I tried it twice to be sure. Liam took the flashlight out of his mouth and smiled. And just like that, the past few hours seemed to melt away into a murky puddle that I stepped clear of.
Did you know this place needs 36 new light bulbs? Why in the world did they have to take the light bulbs too?
Liam asked. 36 is very exact, I said with a faint laugh. Is that your best guess? He seemed confused.
No, I counted. I did a walkthrough with Kylie and Zoo earlier. We also could use 5 new door locks, several gallons of laundry detergent, and about 2 dozen towels. And this?
Liam gestured to the sparse shelves in front of him.
This is pathetic. I have no idea how they even found this many cans of beets, but good Lord. What can you even do with them?
Well, there's fried beets, beet soup, pickled beets.
Ugh.
He covered his ears and actually shuddered.
I'd rather take my chances with the stewed tomatoes.
Is it really that bad? I asked, stepping into the pantry with him. I didn't really need to ask. It was. Actually, it was worse. Aside from a few loaves of bread and deli slices in the refrigerator, we had mostly canned vegetables and junk food like pretzels and chips. I leaned against him as Liam went on about trying to find pasta, cans of soup, and oatmeal, and closed my eyes. His chest was warm against my back, and I liked the way I could feel every animated word as it rumbled through him. He reached over and gave my hair a gentle tug.
I'm boring you, huh?
No, I'm sorry. I'm listening, I said. You were talking about Lucy?
Yeah. She was one of the girls who kept track of the food at East River. I think she'll be able to give some insight into how to rotate supplies and what we should be looking for.
Right. We would need to set up some kind of team to handle supply runs, though there were already so few of us I couldn't imagine Cole giving consent unless the situation was absolutely desperate. And I couldn't imagine him giving consent at all if Liam were the one going out.
You're tired, he said, running a thumb under my eye. Where did you disappear to? I tried waiting up for you, but passed out the second I lay down.
I took a shower and was too tired to figure out which room you guys were in, I said, because how could I admit that I'd purposefully avoided the bunk room they chose? I didn't want to deal with the questions, not when my head felt as heavy as my heart. After having it out with Kate, there just hadn't been any kind of fight left in me. I found the first open bed and tried to sleep. He reached up and pulled one of those small, individual servings of canned fruit off the shelf and popped the lid off before I could refuse. He continued his careful count of the shelves as I tipped the can into my mouth and downed the fruit. I saw each and every possible conversation play out across his features, every question he wanted to ask, and felt a prickle of anxiety with each silent second that ticked by.
I don't want to ask this, but you were going to tell us about the agents and what you did eventually, right? You wouldn't have just let us figure it out when only cars of kids showed up.
I should have told you guys as soon as we were out of the city, I said. It just slipped my mind with everything that happened.
You could have told us before we left,
he said gently. It had to happen fast, I said. And if anyone showed a hint that they knew what was going on,
It could have clued the agents into what I was doing. We had to scramble.
You and Cole.
He knows the other agents better than any of us. I needed his input on how to make the suggestion feel real.
And if I had told you, you'd have tried to force us to leave.
Sometimes, most of the time, actually, it was hard to think of us as having had any kind of separate lives before they converged. Our lives were so closely knit together that it was a compulsion to tell him everything, to hear his thoughts on it all, to see if they matched mine. I'd held back from him before, about what I was, what I had done to my parents, but somehow, it wasn't that it felt worse exactly, more like there was just this nagging, this unflinching sense that something wasn't clicking the way it had before. I'd interrupted some natural pattern in our lives. I bit my lip, watching his brows draw together the same way Cole's had as he concentrated.
That's why you panicked, isn't it? You just found out about it.
Liam rubbed the back of his hand against his forehead.
Damn. So, what's the plan now?
We'll all meet for dinner to talk through a plan for freeing some of the camps.
Maybe not dinner, if this is all we have,
he started.
But I'll figure something out. Everything will be all right.
Liam draped an arm around my shoulders and pulled me in. I pressed my face against his shoulder and let out a shuddering breath, my arms locked around his waist. This was right. Being close to him like this was right. For the first time all day, my mind wasn't racing. Here, in the dark, my pulse fluttering at his closeness, everything else seemed far away. He kissed my hair, my cheek, and I thought, can't lose this. Can't lose this, too. I couldn't tell him everything, not if I wanted him to benefit from what we were trying to do, not if I wanted to protect him. But we could have this, couldn't we? Do you trust me to keep you safe? I asked. I knew it must have seemed like I pulled the question out of nowhere, but all of a sudden it felt vitally important. I could see that he'd been hurt by my not telling him about the agents.
Darling, if it were a choice between you and 100 of Gray's finest, I'd pick you every time.
I caught him by surprise, rolling up onto my toes and kissing him full on the mouth. My fingers were still gripping his shirt when I pulled back. My voice sounded low, rough to my ears. I had to fight for the words, and I was so self-conscious I wasn't sure I was ever going to pick the right ones. I want to... The dazed look faded from his face as he watched me, waiting. I want to... I felt my face flush, but I couldn't tell if it was out of embarrassment or because of the images flashing through my mind. I'd never felt so awkward and tense. I'd kissed him before, really kissed him, but every time before had felt like it had been prompted by stress or urgency or anger, and each had been cut off by the demands of the world around us. This was really the first chance I'd had to think about him, all of him, slowly, to make a thorough study of him. The feel of his hands, the rasp of his stubble, the small breathless sounds he made at the back of his throat. We were in a pantry, and there were kids working outside in the kitchen. The rational part of me knew the limits of this moment, but next time, if we were somewhere else, and if we had another moment to ourselves alone, what then? I felt a small tremor work through me, powered by equal parts panic and longing. I wouldn't know what to do. How not to mess it up. Liam's hands covered mine as he leaned back against the shelves. Relief broke over me when I saw his smile. He understood. Of course he did. From the moment I'd met him, he'd known me better than I'd known myself. When he spoke, his voice was sweet, but his expression was anything but. There was mischief in his eyes, a hungry look. There was a jolt low in my gut as I realized it was because of me.
Now, darling, I just had myself a little thought.
Did you? I murmured, distracted by the way he reached up to run his thumb over my bottom lip.
I did, indeed. It being that you are 17, and I'm 18, and we have every damn right to make out like teenagers. Like normal, happy, crazy kids.
He hooked two fingers over the waistband of my jeans and tugged me closer. I loved his voice when he lowered it like that. His accent broadened, warmed like summer air in the minutes before a thunderstorm. It was the full-on Stuart charm assault, and I was totally helpless against it.
You want to hear the rules?
My heart jackhammered as I nodded. That same hand slid around my hip, up under my shirt, and felt warm and perfect against my lower back. I closed my eyes as his lips just barely brushed mine. His touch made me feel brave. It pushed the uncertainty back until it couldn't reach me.
The first one is you can't think too hard about it. The second is you say when you want to stop. The third is you do whatever feels good to you. The fourth is
you stop talking, I said, blindly reaching back to pull the door shut. And kiss me? He was still chuckling as he complied, and then I was laughing too, because of the bubbling nerves, because his happiness was infectious, and because that dumb first rule didn't matter at all. Liam was the only thought inside my head. He was the hundreds of wild feelings exploding inside my chest. He deepened the kiss and coaxed my lips open to his. I mimicked the stroke of his tongue and was rewarded with a small growl of approval. Normal. Happy. Crazy. For him. It was a half hour later, after hearing him call for me repeatedly from down the hall, that Cole finally strolled into the kitchen and started banging around in the large, beat-up refrigerator. It gave me a second to disentangle myself from Liam and pull myself back together before going out to meet him.
"The animal needs to be fed,"
Cole said, filling a paper cup with water.
"Or did you forget about him?"
And just like that, the weightless, wonderful happiness evaporated under my feet and I crashed back down into reality. I never forget about Clancy. My words were sharpened by irritation. Was I not supposed to trust you to take care of it?
No, you weren't,
Liam called from the pantry. Cole grinned.
He's going to have a bitch of a headache after the drugs we loaded him with. The kid was only starting to come around when I secured him in his little cage. Looked like he was mad enough to shit a brick.
All right, let's get it over with. Rather than taking us back upstairs, Cole led the way down the hallway of the lower level, passing several bunk rooms before reaching a door marked File Storage. He pulled out a small key ring and passed it to me. The lock gave me some resistance as I slid the key in. I took a quick glance around to make sure no one was watching and rattled the handle to make sure it would stay locked. We slipped inside. Cole reached up to tug on the string for the lone light bulb overhead. There were those simple, utilitarian metal shelves stuffed with random boxes and piles of paper, archived op files, supposedly, if you believed the lie that had been etched onto the door. It was convincing enough at first glance. My eyes roamed the library of folders and binders, all neatly lined up on the shelves, as Cole moved to the two shelves that were flush against the back wall.
"This one," he said, "with the red storage box. Give it a tug."
I reached over the top of the letter-sized box. The dust on the lid had been recently disturbed by hands reaching to get to the hidden latch on the shelf's back support bar. My fingers curled around it and yanked up. There was a loud, satisfying click as the entire bookshelf swung out toward me. The automatic lights in the hallway beyond it clicked on, flooding the small storage room with blinding, ultra-white light. It was a short walk down the bare hall to yet another locked door. Here I had to insert the key and punch in an access code, 400-4004, before the door sprang open with a hiss.
"I'll be here,"
he said quietly.
"Signal if you need me."
Another part of the deal? He wanted someone to watch my back from behind the door when I came to bring the little pest food. My choices were him, Kate, or Vida, but I'd added Chubbs to the list since he had always been resistant to Clancy's influence. I stepped inside the second hall, letting Cole shut and lock the door behind me. There were two holding cells in the hall, both of them about 10 feet wide and 4 feet deep. Each had been outfitted with a cot, a plastic toilet, and a bucket of water for washing and brushing teeth. As cells went, these were certainly an upgrade from the damp, musty spaces that had been carved out for the interrogation block at HQ. Better lit, too. Almost blinding with all the ultra-bright white walls and the exposed fluorescent light bulbs overhead. Hardly up to Clancy Gray's usual standard of living, though he seemed comfortable enough sprawled out on the cot, his arm thrown over his eyes. Cole must have hosed him down before bringing him inside, changed him into clean sweats. It was more than he deserved. He didn't stir as I moved toward the door. The metal flap built into it had another lock. I assumed my key would work on it, and was right. It squealed as it opened, but still, no response from our prisoner. I dropped the bag of food inside, set the glass of water on the small ledge on the other side, and took extra care in relocking it. Clancy waited until I had already turned to go to speak.
"Move in going badly?"
His voice was unsettlingly curious as he turned around to face me.
"Your thoughts are so loud I can hear them through the glass."
It was irrational, but for a moment I was worried he meant that literally. But I could feel him when he was trying to poke around inside of my head. There was always a tingling rush that raced down the back of my skull and neck. Clancy dragged his food over to his cot with his foot. He made a face as he pulled his sandwich apart.
"What? There's no steak anywhere west of Texas? What is this meat?"
I started to roll my eyes, only to realize he was actually serious.
"It's bologna."
He sniffed at it, his lip curled in disgust, then rewrapped it in the plastic it had come in.
"I think I'd rather starve." "Be my guest." "In any case," Clancy said, ignoring this, "I'm disappointed by your lack of smugness. I would have thought you'd be in here first thing, gloating about being reunited with your little flash drive again. What's got your mood so sour?"
"I'm looking at him." He let out a light laugh.
"I overestimated how much you'd be able to figure out in these first few hours. Does the flash drive even work, or was it erased by the EMP? How are those crispy research pages you rescued from the fire? You probably haven't even found out what they're doing to Thurmond yet, have you?"
An invisible hand seemed to wrap around my throat, forcing me to lean forward. Thurmond? What was happening at Thurmond that would have him looking so damn gleeful at my blank look? "Don't say it," I commanded myself, fighting against the panic that spiraled up inside me at that one word. "Don't react." Clancy tore off a piece of the sandwich's bread and popped it into his mouth. When I didn't demand answers, the corner of his mouth lifted into a smirk.
"If you want to know, you'll have to look and see for yourself."
He tapped his temple. A challenge or an invitation?
"I know you're angry," he began, "about the way it all went down in Los Angeles."
"Thurmond," I kept thinking. That word was an infection, exactly as he'd hoped, if I had to guess. "He's been trapped with us for weeks. There's no way he could have new information." Unless it wasn't new information at all, just a card he'd been holding on to, waiting for the exact right moment to play it. It took me a few seconds too long to answer.
"Angry doesn't begin to cover it."
He nodded.
"One day, though, one day, months, or even years from now, maybe you'll see that destroying that research was a selfless act, not a selfish one."
"Selfless?" I whirled back toward the glass wall, cutting off my own retreat to the door.
"Taking away the chance for kids to survive and never face the change? Robbing them of their only real chance to be reunited with their families and returned home is selfless?" "Is that what you want?"
I thought liberating Thurmond in time would take precedence,
Clancy said, inspecting one of the grapes.
Are these organic?
I spun on my heel, crossing the distance between his cell and the door as quickly as I could without running.
Ruby, listen to me. The cure is another way to control us, take decisions out of our hands. What happened when you brought the research here? Have they even let you see it? Do you know where it is right now?
My fingers curled into fists at my side.
It's not some magic bandage that's going to heal all wounds. It's not going to erase the stigma of what we are in their minds. If there aren't side effects, they'll always be waiting, watching, praying that we don't relapse.
Tell me, he said, drawing his legs up, crossing them on his cot. I watched, silently, as his fingers drummed against his knees.
Does knowing there's a cure change the way the agents here treat you?
Silence stretched between us. He smiled.
What they're trying to do here isn't about you at all. They may have told you things to get you to come along, to surrender your trust to them, but they won't see their promises through. Not even Stuart.
The only person I have to worry about not trusting is you.
Whatever you're trying to accomplish by being here, he said in a low voice, bring all the kids you can to back you up. They're the ones that'll follow and trust you, not any of the adults. You'll be lucky if they ever see you as anything other than a useful weapon.
Because it's so easy to find kids in hiding scattered around the country?
I can help you track down the tribes roaming around. You can train them, teach them to defend themselves. We're heading toward the end game, and if you don't find them, they're going to be collateral damage in the war.
I gritted my teeth, but he was talking again before I could fire off any retort.
Forget the adults, Ruby. Make sure you're out in front of the kids. Make them love you, and you'll have their loyalty forever.
Make them love me? I said, my anger coming back in a surge.
Not everything at East River was fake, he said coolly.
But everything that had been important, every memory I had of that place, was tainted by the creeping black touch of his mind. Just the thought of the way he had studied me across the campfire, the way he'd slid right through every one of my last mental defenses, the way those kids, the cubbies, had looked at him in total adoration. A shudder ripped down my spine. The room had grown too small and too cold for me to keep standing there and listen to every last trace of bullshit he wanted to spew. I turned back to the door, unlocking it, and made sure I switched the lights back off. And still, Clancy's voice floated to me through the darkness. He contaminated the air, made it sound like he was everywhere at once.
When you're ready to be in charge and actually do something, let me know. I'll be here, waiting.
And judging by the last look I'd had at his face, that was exactly where he wanted to be. 7. Cole didn't say a word to me until we were back out in the hall, with several doors between us and the president's son. Even then, he seemed distracted, pale brows furrowed, arms crossed over his chest.
Could you hear what he was saying? I asked.
He nodded.
Through the small grate under the observation window.
Before the attack, did you hear any intelligence chatter about Thurmond? I asked. Were there any rumors floating around HQ?
I was hoping you'd have some idea of what he was talking about,
Cole said as we headed down the hallway.
I'll look into it.
I was headed to the large former rec room just to the left of the stairwell for dinner, but he was clearly escaping into Alban's old office. I caught his wrist as he brushed by me. When are we going to firm up a plan for the camps?
Not tonight, he said. We're still waiting on two more cars, and I want to try making a few calls to old supply contacts. Outfitting this place has to be priority number one. No one is going to believe we can do anything if we can't even get the kids clean clothes and a few warm meals. I asked some of the Greens to start thinking about how they would stage a camp assault. In the meantime, take a breather. We'll be working soon enough.
I returned his wave as he crossed through the doors connecting the hallways and followed the smell of spaghetti sauce into the rec room. Someone had assembled folding tables and chairs in neat lines, brought in a small radio, and propped it on the scuffed-up pool table the agents had oh-so-graciously left behind. Next to that were two large pots with serving utensils and a dismally small stack of paper plates. It had taken me a few hours to notice that the ranch was reassembling itself into something that seemed kind of clean. The silent downstairs halls were punctuated by the banging of washers and dryers, which seemed to be going at all hours of the day. I finally saw that the floor tiles were more white than yellow, and when I went to splash some water on my face in the bathroom, there were no drizzles of rust-stained water streaking across my skin. I smelled bleach, detergent. It was almost homey. I passed by two sheets of paper tacked onto the door, stopping to examine them. I recognized the handwriting immediately as Liam's, but it took me a moment to understand what the charts were, why there were stubs of pencils attached to each one with string. They were sign-up sheets, divided up by chore: laundry, cleaning, organizing, food preparation. Under each of these headers were the names of kids. Everyone had to help, but they could choose their chore. That was Liam's style. I spotted Liam, Chubbs, Vida, and Zoo sitting at their own table, heads bent close together. Vida saw me first and instantly shut up, pulling back and casually picking up her fork again. I finished spooning some pasta onto my plate and moved toward them. "What's going on?" I asked, taking the open seat and turning to poke Liam's side. "I saw the chore charts. You should have told me earlier so I could have signed up for something." Liam glanced up from his notebook. When he moved his hand, I saw a string of numbers, equations he seemed to be untangling.
"It's all right. You're busy with other things."
Other things that were, unfortunately, not spending time with him alone in the pantry. "What's this?" I asked, leaning over to get a better look at what he was doing. He shot me a rueful smile.
"Trying to figure out when exactly we're going to run out of food. I've been looking at the nearby towns, and I think I have a few we could hit for supplies where there's minimum contact with the population."
"Cole said he's handling it," I said. He snorted. Something about that rankled me. "It's too dangerous to leave the ranch right now. He'll take care of it." Zoo turned to study me, her expression troubled. I pointed to her plate of pasta, but she still didn't touch it.
"We could go out," Liam pressed. "You, me, Vi. Hell, I'd bet Kylie would come. It'll be like old times."
Zoo reached across the table, gripping his forearm, holding it down against the table. She kept shaking her head, eyes wide. He wasn't allowed to go. She wasn't going to let him leave. And secretly, I was glad she was the one telling him so, because I was right there with her. I wanted him here, where he was tucked safely out of harm's way.
"I've done it 100 times,
he told her softly.
"What's got you like this?"
She released his arm, shrinking back in a way that was very unlike her. I started to ask her what was wrong, only to be interrupted by a frustrated groan.
"Ugh, never mind. I'm not even hungry," Chubbs exploded, shoving his plate away from him.
There was more sauce down the front of his shirt than there was left on his plate. It turns out it's fairly difficult to get a fork full of slippery noodles up to your mouth when you are missing the eye part of hand-eye coordination. When Vida didn't go in for the kill on that one, I shot a sideways glance in her direction. The whole room vibrated with happy chatter, laughter, which made Vida's silence that much more unnerving.
"You shouldn't have thrown the old lenses away. They weren't cracked that badly." "What was I supposed to do?" Chubb snapped. "Tape them to my face? Walk around holding one up to my eye like a magnifying glass?"
"Wouldn't that have been better than sulking around and blindly bumping into things?" I asked. He'd gone off earlier and pitched them into a trash can in hopeless frustration. I'd fished them out and brought them back to the sleeping room for when he calmed down and started thinking rationally again. "We can ask Cole about getting glasses added to our supplies list," I said.
"The lenses are prescription," Chubb said sharply. "I don't have the information, even if he could get them made. Reading glasses aren't strong enough, and they give me a headache when I wear them too long."
Vida slid something across the table, never once looking up from her plate of pasta. Chubbs must have thought it was some kind of utensil, otherwise I have no idea why he didn't immediately snatch the glasses up. The frames were about the same size and shape that his old ones had been. The lenses stuck out, not by any means a perfect fit, but close enough. I opened them and slid them onto his face, and Chubbs practically reared back in surprise, patting them in disbelief.
"Wait, what? These are..."
"Don't lose your shit," Vida said, casually raking her fork through her spaghetti. "Dolly had an extra pair of reading glasses and helped me switch out the lenses for yours. They look just as stupid as the other ones did, but you can at least see, yeah?"
Chubbs and I both stared at her, stunned.
"Vi," I began. "What?" Her pitch rose slightly on the word, coming out as a bark. More insecure than angry. "I got tired of being his seeing eye dog. It made me feel like an asshole for laughing every time he tripped or walked into something. And I don't like feeling like an asshole all the time, okay?"
"It's so hard to go against our nature," Chubb started.
"He means thank you," I said, cutting him off. "That was really thoughtful, Vi."
"Yeah, well..." God, she was embarrassed.
I took another bite to hide my smile.
"I didn't save the starving children of Africa or anything. He breaks this pair, he's SOL.
"Wait, what?" Liam's startled voice broke clean through our conversation. He slid the paper Zoo had been scribbling messages on closer to him.
"Are you sure? I mean, positive? Why didn't you tell me before?"
Zoo reached across the table and took the paper back out of his hands. He was too impatient to let her finish writing the words out and awkwardly leaned across the table, his eyes scanning the words as fast as she could put them down.
"I thought you would leave to find them. I'm sorry."
"Oh, man," he said, dropping a hand on her head. "I wouldn't have. I won't."
"You don't have to be sorry, I get it. But are you sure? It just seems like such a coincidence."
He stilled suddenly, looking a little sick to his stomach at whatever she wrote down next.
"That sounds like her. But how did it even happen? What were you doing in Arizona?"
Chubbs waved a hand in front of his friend's face.
"Care to share?"
"Zoo!"
Liam pressed a fist to the base of his throat and rubbed it for a moment.
"Apparently, on the way over to California, Zoo crossed paths with my mom. I've been trying to figure out where they've been in hiding."
Zoo was still pale, watching Liam closely, like she didn't quite believe him. I sat back, the flicker of concern turning into an all-out flame. Before, we'd always made it a priority to keep the four of us together as a unit. It was rare for us to split off, and even then, no one was really ever left alone. I could understand the rush of feeling that came with being back together, wanting to make up for lost time. But this desperation I saw in her, the way she always seemed to be tracking us, making sure we were still there, made my heart feel like it was tearing itself into pieces. What had happened to her? Zoo wasn't normally scared or even all that anxious as a person. At least, she hadn't been. Someone had done this to her, exposed every last nerve, left her wide open and raw.
"Because they caught heat from Gray's lapdogs after you broke your stupid ass out of that camp?" Vida asked with her usual sensitivity.
"Why Arizona?" I asked. "Or, I guess a random choice is as good a choice as any?" Zoo was furiously scribbling something down, looking up only to shoot an exasperated look at us when we crowded over her. Liam put his hands up.
"At your leisure, ma'am."
When she did finish, it wasn't at all what I was expecting. And judging by how Liam's face lost the remainder of its color,
It wasn't what he was expecting either.
They're hiding kids in their house, protecting them. She used the name you gave me, Della Goodkind, but I knew it was her because she looks and talks like you. I told her you were safe.
Oh, God, Chubb said when I spun the paper his way. Why am I not surprised? Your whole family fell from the crazy tree and hit every damn branch on the way down.
Zoo knocked her pencil against the end of his nose in reproach before continuing in her big, looping handwriting.
It was just for a few minutes, but she was really nice.
Liam was like a starving kid stumbling across someone's picnic basket. Did she say anything else? Was Harry there with her? You said she's been helping kids, but did she ask you if you wanted to stay, or any of the other girls? Is that what happened to Talon?
Which of those questions did you want answered first? Chubbs asked, because I think you just crammed 10 into 2 seconds.
Zoo shrank back against her chair. The pencil rolled off the table and into her lap as her eyes drifted down to where her fingers were busy rolling up the hem of her shirt.
Kylie said Talon didn't make it to California, I said carefully. Did someone hurt him? Did he...
Did the kid croak?
There was a steel-cut edge to Vida's voice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I supposed to act like the rest of them and treat you like you're a baby? You need me to coat everything in cotton candy, or can you be a big girl?
Liam flushed with anger.
Enough.
You have no idea what you're even talking about, Chubbs growled.
That's not fair, I began.
The only one who didn't seem bothered by it, who didn't seem to be showing much of any emotion, was Zoo. She stared at Vida for a moment, meeting her hard gaze with one of her own. Then she returned to her sheet and began to write quickly again. Both Liam and Chubbs were silently fuming in Vida's direction. Zoo held up the paper again, this time angling it so even Vida could read the words there.
We got run down by skip tracers, and he died when we crashed. A friend helped me get to California when I got separated from the others. I let out a soft sigh and closed my eyes, desperately trying not to picture it. God, Talon, no one deserved that.
Friend? Chubbs pressed. Another kid?
She shook her head, but didn't elaborate.
An adult? An adult drove you?
Liam ran both hands over his face.
Oh my God, I'm scaring the crap out of myself picturing this. We never should have split up. Never. Never. Oh, my God. Weren't you scared he was going to turn you in?
Zoo was so still, so pale, I wasn't sure she was breathing. She looked up toward the ceiling, blinking rapidly, like she was trying to fight off rising tears. She's a good judge of character, I said, putting an arm around her shoulders. Still so small. Little bird bones, made that much sharper by hunger and stress.
And you came to that conclusion how, exactly?
Chubbs asked, pushing his glasses up.
Based on the fact that she let you into the van instead of locking you out?
Exactly, Liam said.
I seem to recall someone trying to vote her out.
Yeah, I said. Thanks a lot, trying to dump me off on some random road.
Excuse me for trying to look out for the group,
Chubbs huffed. Zoo started to write something down, but Vida ripped the paper out of her hands, held it in front of her face, and tore it straight down the middle.
If you want to say something, fucking say it.
Her chair screeched as she shoved herself back from the table and swiped her plate from it. I saw the strain of keeping it together and how stiffly she held her neck up and her shoulders back. For one strange second, all I could think about were those old cartoons they used to show on the weekend, the way they'd show a spark burning its way up the fuse of a pile of dynamite. I should have known better than to follow her.
Bye,
I called, and had to jog to catch up to her. She was stalking down the hall, all lean muscles and furious power, down the stairs to the lower level. Where was she even going?
Vida!
I grabbed her arm, but she threw me off. Hard enough that I hit the nearby wall. A burst of pain rocketed through my shoulder, but I didn't back down.
Her top lip had been curled into a snarl, but the second she registered what she'd done, it lost most of its ugliness.
"You're gonna want to walk away,"
she told me, and for the first time I realized she probably didn't know where she was headed either. She was just trying to get away from that room. From us.
"Not like this," I said. "What's going on? Talk to me."
Vida turned and started down the hall again, only to spin back on her heels. I had misdiagnosed the situation. Badly.
"Jesus Christ, you can't let anything sit, can you?" she snapped. "You can't ever just let anyone be to work their shit out. Hilarious, seeing how you can't even handle your own crap."
"I'll try to work on caring less," I said. Zack was coming down the hall toward us, his eyes looking everywhere but at the corner we'd drawn ourselves into. I turned my back on him at the same moment Vida did. She waited until his footsteps faded before releasing a harsh breath.
"You know, I really thought you and me..."
Her voice choked off. When she laughed, there was a strained quality to it.
"Never mind. What do you even care?"
"You just told me I care too much, and now I don't care enough," I said. "Which is it?"
"Both? Neither? Jesus, what does it matter?"
she snapped, running her hands back through her short hair. The ends were still bleached, with only the barest hint of blue still clinging to the strands.
"I'm happy for you. Oh, so fucking happy for you that you get to have this beautiful reunion with your real friends. You get to stay with these people and shoot the breeze about how great it was when it was just the four of you. You get to have all of your stupid inside jokes. But what I can't stand, what makes me sick, is how you..."
"Is how I what?" It was a struggle to keep my voice down.
"What else? Lay it on me. Come on. Clearly something else is pissing you off if you're picking fights with a girl who's clearly been through hell and back. I can't fix it if you won't tell me what's going on."
The spark finally hit the pile of dynamite, but the explosion wasn't what I was expecting. Vida's expression shattered, and she ripped air into her lungs with short, jagged breaths.
"You just replaced him. In your head, you just traded Jude for that little girl like he was nothing. Like we were nothing to you. I get it, okay? But don't. Don't pretend to act like you give a shit when you clearly don't."
She was crying. Really crying. And I was so stunned by it that I just stood there. She spun away from me, anger and humiliation coming off her in waves, backing herself farther into the corner. "You just replaced him. Like we were nothing to you." Was that really what she thought? A deep, echoing pain ripped through me. That I'd never cared about them? That I wasn't committed? I was cold to them in the beginning. I know I was. But it had only been to protect myself. Letting people in, dropping the walls from around your heart. I couldn't risk being vulnerable like that in the League, not when I needed to survive. It had seemed crucial to learn to bury every feeling, good or bad, at Thurmond, to fold every wild emotion back before it got away from me and someone wearing black noticed. There, if you were still, if you were mostly invisible, if you couldn't be provoked and punished, you were left alone. I'd fallen right back into that strategy at the League, functioning from moment to moment, op to op, lesson to lesson, numbing every stray feeling to avoid exploding with how unfair it all was, how terrifying, and how crushing. So no one, even for a second, would question my loyalty to their cause. For a long time, it had been the only way I had of protecting myself from the world and everyone in it. But Jude? Jude had burrowed right in, either oblivious to what I was doing or trying in spite of it. Did she blame me for all of this? If she had been leader, would any of this have ever happened? Would we all... I closed my eyes, trying to black out the images that stormed in my mind. Jude on the ground,
Jude suffocating on his own blood. Jude's broken back, twisted legs. The look in his eyes, like he was begging me to help him, to kill him and end the suffering. That damn nightmare. Chubbs told me again and again that it would have been instantaneous, that his...